Okay, let's start with something that sounds simple. Imagine you're watching heat spread through a room. You know, it diffuses, smooths out naturally. But now, what if there's also this random, unpredictable jiggling everywhere, all the time, a kind of chaotic element? And here's the kicker. What if the strength of that random jiggle actually depends on how hot that spot already is? Does the whole system just stay calm? Or does it eventually spiral completely out of control, maybe even hit infinity? Today, we are taking a deep dive into exactly that kind of question. We're exploring the fascinating world of this stochastic heat equation. It's this powerful mathematical model, right? It combines that classic diffusion, like heat spreading, with these random influences we just talked about. And for a long time, the really big, tantalizing question at its heart has been, can the solutions to this equation actually explode, you know, become infinitely large in a finite amount of time? So our mission today is to really unpack a groundbreaking new paper. It's from the Annals of Probability, and the title is pretty clear.
Solutions to the stochastic heat equation with polynomially growing multiplicative noise do not explode in the critical regime.
Yeah.
We want to understand what this actually means, why it's frankly a huge deal in mathematics, and how these pretty intricate insights connect to how we think about complex systems more broadly. All right, let's get into it. So to really get why this paper is such a breakthrough, we first need to understand the equation itself, the stochastic heat equation, or SAG.
Right. It starts with the familiar heat equation. That describes how temperature, or really any quantity like it, just naturally spreads out, smooths out. That's the ATX part, the Laplacian. It captures that diffusion mathematically.
Okay, the standard spreading part. Got it.
But then comes the stochastic bit, the random part. Specifically, what we call multiplicative noise.
And that's the CXWX term in the equation.
Exactly. W represents space-time white noise. Think of it as pure, uncorrelated randomness hitting every single point in space and time. It's an idealization, but a powerful one.
And multiplicative, that's the key part you mentioned earlier.
That's absolutely crucial. It means the intensity, the strength of that random jolt isn't fixed. It scales with the value of U itself at that point.
So if U is bigger, the random kick is stronger.
Precisely. And the paper also sets up the problem carefully, right? Periodic boundary conditions, think of it like a loop where the ends connect and starting from a nice, bounded, continuous initial state. And that dependence, that multiplicative nature, is exactly why this equation is so interesting and so challenging, and why this whole explosion question became such a major focus.
Right. So what does explosion mean here? We're not talking about a physical boom.
No, not at all. It's a mathematical concept. It means the solution, UTX, just shoots off towards infinity at some specific point in time, and that time is finite. It doesn't take forever to get there.
Okay.
The paper defines it really carefully. Let's say is the latest time the solution stays below any finite number n. If TESS itself is finite, then we say it explodes.
But if it can stay bounded forever?
If the probability of check being infinite is 1, then it never explodes. It stays well-behaved.
And this whole question, it really came to a head around what's called the critical threshold, didn't it? Based on earlier work.
That's right. Really important work by Miller and Sowers. They looked at how fast the noise term grows as U gets large. Let's say it grows roughly like C1 plus 2. They found a critical value for that exponent, U.
Which was?
Igesol's 32. This number, 32, turned out to be incredibly important.
How so?
Well, Mueller proved that if the noise grows slower than this critical rate, so Wu is less than 32, then the solutions cannot explode. They always stay finite. They're stable.
Okay. That makes intuitive sense. Less aggressive noise, less chance of blowing up.
Exactly. But then Mueller also proved the flip side. If the noise grows faster than this critical rate, if U is greater than 32, then the solutions will explode, at least with some positive probability.
Okay. So below 32, no explosion. Above 32, explosion likely.
Precisely. Which left this massive nagging question. What happens exactly at the critical point, right when G equals 32? Does it behave like the stable case below, or does it tip over into the explosive case above? That was the big mystery.
This is where the new paper comes in. This is the exciting part. Michael Salen's paper gives the definitive answer.
It really does. The main result, theorem 1.1, is unambiguous. It proves that solutions to the stochastic heat equation do not explode when you're exactly in that critical OPSHU equals 32 setting.
Wow. So it stays stable, even right on the edge.
Exactly. It closes this major gap in our understanding. It shows that even at this precise critical point, the system holds together. It remains well-behaved.
That feels slightly counterintuitive, maybe. You hear critical and you think it should be unstable.
You might think that, yeah. You might expect it to act more like the VAC-32 case and just blow up, but it doesn't. And that's why it's such a foundational result, not just for SHE, but for the whole field of stochastic partial differential equations, STDEs.
Okay, a huge result. So how did Salins crack it? The old methods for ACK32 obviously didn't work here. What was the new idea?
Yeah, they definitely needed a new strategy. The existing tools just weren't sharp enough for the critical case. The first really clever move was about dominating or sort of sandwiching the solution.
Sandwiching.
They introduced two helper processes, VTX and VTX. These are non-negative, so always zero or positive. And they proved rigorously that the actual solution, UTX, is always trapped between VTX on the low side and VTX on the high side.
Okay, so if you can show the bread of the sandwich doesn't explode,
then the filling, you can't either. It's contained. It's a really smart way to control the potentially tricky behavior of you by focusing on these related, potentially simpler processes, V and V.
Okay, so they've got the solution effectively trapped. What's the next step to prove these sandwich processes, V and V, don't explode?
The next key step was to look at the L1 norm of V. You can think of the L1 norm, written as VTL1, as sort of the total amount or maybe the average size of the solution across all of space at a given time t.
So not the peak value, but the overall magnitude.
Exactly. And they managed to prove that this L1 norm, this average magnitude, cannot explode in finite time. That's a crucial piece showing the total stuff doesn't run away to infinity. It's a necessary step towards showing the maximum value doesn't explode either.
Right. Got the sandwich, got the average magnitude under control. But the paper highlights something called a novel observation about quadratic variation.
Yeah.
This sounds like where the real magic happened for the critical case.
It absolutely is. This is the heart of the new proof technique needed for GetN32.
So first, what is quadratic variation in simple terms?
Okay. Think of it as a way to measure the cumulative intensity of the randomness over time. It's like adding up the squares of all the little random jiggles the system experiences. It quantifies the total accumulated effect, the sort of jiggle energy that the noise has injected.
Okay, the total random energy put in. Why was bounding that so critical here, but not for the NN32 case?
Because right at that critical threshold, GetN32, the randomness is just strong enough that its cumulative effect becomes borderline dangerous. Below 32, the noise is weak enough that this cumulative effect doesn't threaten to cause an explosion, so you didn't need to control it so precisely.
But at 32?
At 32, you absolutely do. Salins' key insight, the novel observation, was proving that the expected value of this quadratic variation associated with the L1 norm also remains bounded. This specific estimate, it's equation 1.15 in the paper, if you're looking, provides the extra control over the volatility that was missing before. It tames the cumulative jiggle right at the critical point.
That makes a lot of sense. At the tipping point, you need to track not just the current state, but the history of the fluctuations. Okay, so they have this new control over the jiggle energy. How did they use that, along with the other pieces, to finally prove non-explosion of the maximum value?
They combined this with another powerful technical tool, what they call an improved L-infinity moment bound on the stochastic convolution.
Okay, that's a mouthful. What does that do?
Yeah, basically, think of it as a very sophisticated way to get a handle on the maximum possible values the solution can reach anywhere in space. The L-infinity norm is the maximum value. This gives them better estimates for those peaks.
Better control over the highest points.
Exactly. And then they cleverly define these specific points in time called stopping times, denoted Ron. These times mark when the maximum value, the L infinity norm, either doubles or gets cut in half.
So they're tracking these significant jumps or drops.
Right. And by putting together the bounds on the L1 norm, the crucial new bound on the quadratic variation, and these improved L infinity estimates, they were able to show something really neat. They prove that the maximum value can only double a finite number of times before other conditions kick in that prevent it from running away further.
So it can jump up, but only so many times before it hits a ceiling, effectively.
That's the essence of it. It can't keep doubling forever within a finite time. And that ultimately proves non-explosion.
It really sounds like the ingenuity here was identifying these subtle statistical properties like that quadratic variation that only become truly critical right at that boundary, that Golgi-Nagel 32 point.
Absolutely. If you connect this to the bigger picture, it shows how at these critical thresholds, you often need to look deeper, quantify things that seemed less important before. The system's response to the accumulation of noise becomes paramount, needing new mathematical tools to capture it.
And this isn't just, you know, solving a neat math puzzle, right? This has broader implications for understanding systems with randomness.
Oh, definitely. This paper makes a significant contribution to how we understand the long-term behavior of SBDEs in general, how noise really shapes what these complex equations do over time.
Are these ideas applicable beyond the specific heat equation studied here?
Yes, very much so. The original results by Mueller and now this critical case result by Salins have inspired extensions and similar analyses for a whole range of other SBDEs. Things like reaction diffusion equations, which model chemical reactions spreading out, or fractional heat equations with different kinds of diffusion, even stochastic wave equations.
So the fundamental insight about noise and stability.
It really is. It shows that these concepts, critical growth rates for noise, the possibility of explosion, the methods used to prove stability are fundamental across many different systems where diffusion meets randomness.
Now, the paper also touches on something else interesting. What happens if you add other forces into the mix, not just the diffusion and the multiplicative noise?
Right. They briefly explore adding another term, let's call it Theia, which represents some deterministic force or reaction happening alongside the diffusion and noise.
And the interactions get kind of weird, don't they?
They really do.
Yeah.
It highlights how complex the interplay can be. For instance, they mention that if you add a forcing term that grows fairly fast, like U-log, you might think this just makes an explosion more likely.
Yeah, it seems logical.
But counterintuitively, in that situation, the multiplicative noise can actually grow much slower than the critical U32 rate, something like U-locine, and the solution still won't explode.
Huh. So the deterministic force somehow interacts with the noise requirement for stability.
It seems so. It suggests a complex balancing act. And then there's the other side of the coin. What if is strongly dissipative, meaning it actively pushes the solution back down, counteracting growth.
Like friction or some kind of decay term.
Exactly. In that case, the noise term can actually grow faster than the critical U32 rate, and the solution still won't explode.
Because the dissipation cancels out the extra noise.
That's the idea. The dissipative force is strong enough to keep the noise in check, even when the noise is technically supercritical on its own. It really underscores that you can't just look at the noise in isolation. You have to understand how all the different forces, diffusion, randomness, other reactions, or forcing terms interact and balance each other, sometimes in quite surprising ways.
So let's pull this all together. What's the big takeaway for us? We started today asking about heat spreading with random kicks and whether things could spiral out of control. We dove into the stochastic heat equation, and the big question was, does it explode, especially at that critical noise level? Thanks to this really impressive work by Michael Salins, we now have the answer. Even right at that precise critical point, Gowers 32, where the noise is right on the edge, the system maintains its integrity. It does not explode in finite time. You know, this deep dive into what is, let's be honest, a highly technical paper, it really reveals these subtle but profound mechanisms governing complex systems with randomness. It shows how stability can hinge on just a hair's breadth difference in how fast noise grows. And crucially, it highlights how understanding the interplay, the balance between different forces like diffusion, noise, and maybe other reactions is absolutely key. Thinking about applications, maybe in climate modeling. If you find that certain random fluctuations, say in temperature pressure fields, scale near a critical rate like this, this mathematical result offers some reassurance. It suggests that even at that critical edge, runaway explosive behavior might be less likely than we feared, providing a stronger theoretical footing. So the final thought for you is, where else might we see this kind of critical balance between randomness and stability? What other chaotic phenomena, maybe in finance or biology or fluid dynamics, could be better understood by asking? Are we near a critical threshold? And what subtle factors, like this quadratic variation, determine whether the system holds together or flies apart?